Tonight we're talking with Michael Kuby McDowell, the author of Quiet Pools and The Trigger, written with Arthur C. Clarke. Hello.
Hi.
Glad to have you here.
It's a pleasure.
I found the statement you had made, writing fiction is dreaming with your eyes open, interesting. Could you elaborate a little bit more on that?
Well, I don't know if it's true for everyone, to be honest, but it is how I experience writing. It's almost like I'm going into a trance, and in fact, I have some music that I use that helps me get away from the mundane world that I'm in and get back into the world that... I suppose some people would say I'm creating it, but it doesn't seem that way to me. And that's part of the experience, too, is the feeling that I'm a witness, spectator, a reporter, a historian, but not the creator of the thing that I'm seeing. And just as you don't really feel like the author of your own dreams, you know, it's something that you experience rather than something that you invent. Subjectively, and that's what writing is like for me. I like to write in longer sessions, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 hours. I can't do it in 15-minute blocks because I can't jump in and out of the dream state or the whatever you want to call it that easily. And
so do you actually stay glued to your keyboard for 5 to 6 hours?
Well, with the help of the Pepsi IV and the and the bowl of Chex Mix. Now, I can leave it briefly and get back into it, but getting into it in the first place is what's difficult. And So one of the things I have to do is protect my blocks of writing time mm-hmm. from intrusion from the real world. And I have a 4-year-old and a 5-year-old, so it's been a little bit more of a challenge in recent years.
Can imagine it is. Where does your interest in warbirds arise from, and has that interest figured into any of your books?
It's a combination of things. First of all, my father was in the Air Force in the late 1940s and early 1950s, and... if not for a disagreement over whether he had earned a promotion yet, he would probably have made a career of it. So there's some family history there. And part of it is a general history or general interest in military history, particularly World War II. That's simply something I found myself reading about when I was young. American Heritage books for boys, a lot of those were about stories of World War II and so forth, and I found it all very interesting. It's a, my books don't tend to be about a lot of pushing and shoving. They tend to be more about people fighting over their idea of what's good, but part of it's the visceral. I mean, it's when you're out at an air show and a B-1B Lancer makes a high-speed, low-altitude pass, you feel it throughout your body, you know, the power of these incredible machines. I don't know. It's one of my vices. I enjoy learning about the history, and I enjoy... seeing them doing what they're supposed to do. I would much rather go to an air show and see the planes in the air than go to a museum and see them, you know, in the same place that they'll be next week and next week and next week and next week. I mean, it's great that we have the museums to preserve the types, and we don't have enough of everything to put all the different warbirds in the air. But nevertheless, the best for me is when I can get out and hear those engines and feel it in my gut as they're flying past. I think part of it is also the road not taken. I had thoughts about going into the Air Force and trying to become a pilot. I was too tall to do what I wanted to do. I could have only flown multi-engine and cargo to aircraft or possibly bombers, and I wanted to go the fighter pilot route. And so that's a road not taken for me. So
have you been to Oshkosh then?
Yes, I have. I went out... I think it's 3 summers ago now, and I worked security at the Warbirds area. Mm-hmm. We slept in tents that were, you know, we were maybe 300 yards from the nearest parked Warbird. So we were right down there.
That sounds pretty
and,
exciting.
And 6 a.m. Charlie would wake us up. The airfield opens at 6 a.m. And there's one fellow that every day, he goes out, gets in his T6, and he does a low altitude pass over the tent area and the camping area for the Warbirders as if to say, "It's come on out, it's time."
Interesting.
It was a wonderful experience. Went out there with some friends from Ann Arbor who are part of a science fiction club down there. Mm-hmm. And it was a terrific experience. I'm looking forward to going back sometime soon.
Good. You've also published music. Could you tell us a little bit about your musical career?
I've been playing one instrument or another just about as long as I can remember. I started taking violin and then viola lessons when I was in low elementary grades, third or fourth grade, and got my first guitar when I was in seventh or eighth grade, and I've been playing something or other pretty continuously. I played in the Michigan State University Orchestra. I was not a music major, but when I came here, I made friends with someone who was, Mark Satterwhite, who was a scholarship orchestra player, string bass. And he encouraged me to pick up the viola, which I had pretty much put down during high school and concentrated on guitar and piano. And I started taking lessons from Lyman Bodman over at the MSU Music mm-hmm. Building. And after a couple of semesters of lessons, I'd shaken off enough of the rust that I auditioned for the orchestra. And I played in the orchestra as long as I could schedule it, which was the next 2 years. That was wonderful. That was a great part of my college experience here. And since then, I've pretty much found whatever opportunities I can to keep playing. One of the things I discovered when I started going to science fiction conventions is a sort of subculture of folk music that the participants call filk. The name actually comes from a typo in a convention program many years ago. But basically, it's music with a science fiction or fantasy theme. In the beginning, it tended to be new lyrics grafted onto old tunes that everybody knew and tended to be more of a group sing kind of thing. And through the years, as it's evolved, a lot of very talented singer-songwriters have come to the fore, and now it's more of a... It turned into more of a single performer kind of art. And then I got involved with some people from Indianapolis and another friend from Ann Arbor in what was one of the first ensembles in filk, actually one of the first electric ensembles. We had a 5-piece band called the Black Book Band, and we played at a number of conventions throughout the Midwest, and including we had a feature concert at the Worldcon in Chicago in 1991. And out of those performances came a CD, but that was not really where it started. It started just friends loving to make music together.
Mm-hmm. Sounds fascinating. Are you a big sports fan or specifically MSU? I noticed you had a pretty extensive webpage on MSU athletes.
I guess, well, at least for the culture that I move in, which is the science fiction fandom, I guess I have to be considered a pretty big sports fan. I'm a big Philadelphia Phillies fan. I was born in Philadelphia, grew up right across the river and from the stadium, and I came out here to go to college, and I'm just one of those people that gets invested in the places where I have a personal connection. Mm-hmm. And while I was a student here, I had season tickets every year for football. Didn't do too much with basketball then, but if anything, a bigger basketball fan now than I've ever been. And I like to root for the underdog, and for a lot of years, being a Michigan State sports fan, fed that pretty well. Mm-hmm. As if being a Phillies fan, too. The glory years have been relatively few. One of the things I like about sports, to be honest with you, is that it's a form of entertainment where I don't know what's going to happen. When I'm watching episodic TV, which I watch a fair amount of, or going to the movies, more often than not, I know where the story's going because I've just absorbed so much of that over the years as a writer and as a reader, that actually my friends and family try to shut me up so I don't say what's going to happen next in a movie that none of us have ever seen before. But with sports, you don't have a script and you don't have a conventional story arc. There's still the capacity to be surprised. I love fiction that surprises me. I love fiction that takes a familiar story arc and executes it with such skill and such artistry that it becomes new again. But nonetheless, I really enjoy watching a game, not knowing how it's going to come out, having a chance to root for the underdog. The highs are wonderful. Like I get emotionally involved, and the lows are terrible. But
I'd like to close with a final question. Any other comments you might have? Why do you write science fiction as opposed to other genre?
Well, frankly, I think I would find most any other genre too limiting. Realistic fiction holds you to such a narrow set of parameters of what's possible that I think before long I would be screaming to get out. In science fiction, one of the central issues is that the present didn't have to be the way it is. The future is in our hands to shape. The past didn't have to be the way it was. And it's hard to play with the plasticity of life and culture. The road's not taken. The coincidence and serendipity that sometimes have enormous effects on the way things fall out. It's hard to play with that as much or as clearly in realistic fiction. And most of the other genres are sort of subcategories of realistic fiction, you know, the detective novel and the romance and so forth. You can write about anything under the big umbrella of science fiction or speculative fiction. And I think that's part of the appeal for me. Part of the appeal also is that it's entirely too painfully obvious to me that I will not live forever. And it's a way of playing in futures that I won't be around to see. I think the human prospect is very bright. I think we're going to do wonderful things. We're going to do terrible things. And by writing science fiction, I have a chance to maybe to even influence it a tiny bit, but mostly to try to take a look around that next blind corner and see what might be out there waiting for us.